This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Colin Stanning asked, are there any non-Newtonian fluids that could be used in neutrino detectors instead of water that would help limit the damage caused when one of the modules blow up or and so prevent the extensive damage caused by such a situation as happened recently? I'm guessing custard isn't suitable.
So in general, we are already using neutrino detectors that do not rely on water. One of the fairly popular methods relies on the reaction with chlorine 37, where the collision with the electron neutrino results in the production of argon 37 and electron. The argon atoms are then captured and counted periodically, because they are unstable in nature and because it can undergo a reverse process, so they can capture a free electron and become chlorine 37 again. Counting the number of remaining argon 37 atoms gives a good estimate on the number of neutrinos that had to be captured. And this type of neutrino detector had a considerable contribution to our understanding of the properties of neutrinos and the standard model itself. For example, the Homestake experiment, run in the late 60s and early 70s, detected a discrepancy between the number of predicted electron neutrinos and those that were actually detected coming from our sun. So this difference was non-negligible, as only a third of the expected electron neutrinos were detected. If that rings a bell and you think it has something to do with the fact that we know that three flavors of neutrinos exist, you are correct. This was the first evidence something was not right, and it took scientists nearly three decades to confirm that neutrinos have mass and can oscillate between the three flavors, and the majority of electron neutrinos released by the sun turn into a different flavor before they manage to reach the Earth and our detectors. But now back to your original questions about water-based detectors. The detectors you are referring to generally use heavy water or normal water or add a transparent medium. They are designed to detect Cherenkov radiation, which is emitted when a charged particle moves faster than the speed of light in a particular medium. And do not confuse that with the speed of light in vacuum, c, which, as far as we know, no objects with mass can move at that or greater speed. This flash of radiation is very weak and has to be picked up by sensitive photomultiplier tubes to be detected. It is therefore necessary that liquid or any medium that they are placed in is as clear as possible. But as you've said, the damage is a real concern in this type of the detectors, with the best example being the loss of more than 6,000 detectors from the Super Kamiokande neutrino detector. Assuming a price of $3,000 per tube, that gives us $18 million to replace the broken tubes, not counting the time spent on the maintenance and draining and filling the detector with water again. Even though it is expensive, it is relatively cheap compared to other solutions. So Super Kamiokande has a volume of approximately 50,000 cubic meters. With an approximate density of 1.3 tons per cubic meter, we would require at least 65,000 tons of custard to fill the whole detector. That is 65,000 kilograms of custard, or 65 million kilograms. I was able to find a relatively cheap custard at about £1 per kilogram, which gives 65 million pounds to fill the entire detector with custard, which means you could replace 6,000 detectors almost four times and still have some money left. So I think even economically, filling the detector with custard does not make much sense at the moment. And yes, kids, that's what you need PhD for. Calculating how much custard it takes. Anyway.
Francis Day asked, does the recent finding that there are 10 times more galaxies in the universe than previously thought have any impact on estimates of dark matter contribution to total mass?
So we get asked this question fairly often, in one form or another, when a previously unaccounted for stars, black holes, or, like in this case, galaxies are found. And one important detail is that this survey detected galaxies at a distance of more than 13 billion light years. So some of the observed galaxies existed when the universe was only around 1 billion years old. So that's one important detection. So that's one important distinction. Not 10 times more galaxies that are currently present in the universe, but which were present over 13 billion years of the evolution of the universe. The 2 trillion galaxies also, they have not been observed directly, but has been approximated to also account for galaxies too small or too faint to be picked up by even the longest currently available observations with the Hubble Space Telescope. This number actually gets us closer, if anything, to the matter density of the universe expected from the theoretical calculations and obtained by observing the cosmic microwave background. Currently, we can only see about 10% of the matter that is expected to be there in the form of stars, galaxies, and clusters. So whenever you hear that we find new massive objects in the universe, that only increases the proportion of the ordinary matter that we can observe. And not seeing the ordinary matter is totally different from the dark matter, which we can actually observe indirectly through the interaction with the ordinary baryonic matter. We do know what the ordinary matter is. We know that it's made out of quarks, protons, neutrons, electrons, etc., etc. And we know how much we are expected to see it, and we know how much there is in the universe. But some of it is just too far or too faint for it to be observed. But cosmology tells us that there will never be enough for it to account for effects of dark matter.
Simon Street asks, I was milling things over in my mind and some doubt confirms started to creep in. Is it just me or are others worried with the degree of effort to look for or the possibility of life in the solar system or exoplanet?
Well, I guess some people would be worried that there is not enough effort to look for life on other planets inside and outside our solar system. And they would argue that this is one of the most important outstanding questions, not only from the scientific, but also from sociological, philosophical, and even religious point of view. So proper exoplanet research has been around for less than 3 decades since the first discovery in 1991, with just shy of 3,800 confirmed planets and another 4,500 awaiting confirmation, with the vast majority detected in the Kepler spacecraft. We are just beginning to scratch the surface of what is available. Also, in terms of our own solar system, we have truly started arriving at some conclusions about the possibility of life existing on Mars and other objects. In the past, or even currently, in the last couple of decades.
Would we be better spending budget looking at chemistry in general on Mars than focusing mainly on hydrocarbons or organics, or is this a media distortion?
So it is partially a media distortion or not. So for example, a Curiosity rover is equipped with spectrometers that allow scientists to probe the existence of elements and molecules beyond the organic spectrum. So for example, the chemistry and camera instruments, laser-powered LIBS, can detect elements expected to make up the composition of rocks, including lithium, mercury, or strontium, etc., some of which, like mercury, dangerous to humans, and their identification is a primary concern for future manned exploration of Mars. Other instruments are tasked with searching for direct presence of water or indirect, including the detection of certain minerals, which can only be formed in the presence of liquid water. You will, however, be out of luck if you try to find any mentions of mercury being found on Mars in the mainstream media, as it can be generally viewed as less exciting than the presence of organic compounds. The largest scientific instrument, which according to NASA makes up more than half of the science payload of Curiosity, is indeed devoted to searching for organic compounds. This is based on the assumption that life will follow a similar path to the one it took on Earth, and ultimately multicellular organisms will be carbon-based. There are, of course, alternative hypotheses, with the arguably most popular one discussing the possibility of silicon-based life forms, Alternatives to water as the necessary ingredient have also been proposed, such as ammonia or even sulfuric acid. However, with the abundance of organic molecules in the interstellar medium that we already observed and can currently be viewed at different wavelengths, it is the safest assumption at the moment to search for the complex molecules based on carbon atoms.
I totally agree. It would be amazing to eventually find extraterrestrial life, independent origin from Earth. But are we in danger of not doing good science and missing something, for example, Mars Curiosity, ExoMars 2020, etc.?
I would personally say that there are more imminent dangers to not doing science than search for extraterrestrial life, which is also doing great science at the same time. For example, the SETI Institute is funded entirely by private donors, with some programs involving astrobiology and astrochemistry supported by NASA. One of the primary examples in recent years is the Breakthrough Listen project, funded entirely by a private person. It involves $100 million being spent on searching for signs of extraterrestrial intelligence communications in the radio part of the electromagnetic spectrum. This money is being used to secure the telescope time, find new processing facilities, and in certain cases, help struggling radio telescope observatories which had problems with securing required funding in the years to come. The recorded data can be searched for the presence of astronomical signals such as pulsars and fast radio bursts, so that as much science as possible is done using the same data set. The Allen Telescope Array is used for SETI, but also achieved a myriad of other scientific goals, such as the study of the structure and composition of our Milky Way, identification of new objects such as active galactic nuclei and black holes, and searching for gravitational waves. And to paint a general picture in terms of funding, the proposed budget for NASA for 2019 is $18.9 billion compared to $1.3 trillion of US military budget. Out of those $18.9 billion, 10 are assigned to the space exploration which will eventually result in humans landing on the Moon and Mars, part of which will be spent on the International Space Station, but a big chunk will go towards the new SLS launch vehicle, which has already seen massive cost overruns, delays, and we will definitely see more in the future. Most cuts, for example, to the Earth Science division, with the cut of around 6.5% between the 2017 and 2019 fiscal years, have been caused by certain people in power having different interests and priorities. At the same time, the planetary science budget, which is used to fund, for example, Mars 2020 mission, is expected to increase by more than $700 million between fiscal years 2017 and 2019, following a general trend of increased budget. So problems and controversies with the cost overruns and missed deadlines, so for example for the Curiosity rover and more recently the James Webb Space Telescope, show that the management problems, unexpected changes to the budget, and a misjudged development costs and time are the main threat to not only doing good science, but not doing any science at all.